This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
Democracy Now! Can be heard in its entirety at 8 a.m. on 89.3 FM and at WPFW.org. Spectrum Today was produced by Askia Muhammad, engineering by David Kelly. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening.
Celebrating Poetry Appreciation Month. This is WPFW Washington.
Live from Ben's Next Door, 12th and U Streets Northwest, it's the Raucous Caucus with Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and Terry D. Kester. It's seriously funny, and it begins right now.
Good evening again, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Raucous Caucus, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Seems like deja vu. There's deja vu going on here.
Hey, that was weird. I am happy to announce the rehearsal is over. This is the show.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned to WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. We're glad you're here. I am Terry D. Kester, and to my right is...
John Conyers Jr. Garland Nixon.
Garland Nixon. And to my left
is Mark Levine. But John Conyers Jr. will be joining us.
He will be here. Yes, he'll be here shortly, and he's going to talk about his jobs bill, which, just in case you've forgotten, because I know you're going to be running Congress and helping him out on this, is H.R. 4277, the Humphrey-Hawkins 21st Century Full Employment and Training Act. And this crowd, if anything, needs full employment, and they need training.
I was about to say, they need audience training.
There are people out there in Radioland who do not know who John Conyers Jr.
is.
Or where we are.
Can come see him tonight.
Do we know where? Oh, 12th and U. 12th and U.
1211 U Street.
1211 U Street.
Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl. Yeah. We are here. This is our last Ben's Next Door for the month.
Yep.
And back in May, next month, we'll be in studio.
This
is your last chance to come join us.
We can take your phone calls when we're in the studio. Here, we need you here in person.
That's right.
And in come a few short minutes, sometimes in the next few minutes, Mr. Congressman John Conyers Jr., the man who is responsible for Martin Luther King's birthday being a national holiday.
That's right.
We'll be here amongst us, so there's plenty of time. Drive on over, stop on by, come on in. You can say hi to Mr. Conyers, and you can meet the Raucous Caucus.
Apparently, he was Dr. King's lawyer. You just talked
about that.
I did not know that.
That's right. Yes,
he's been in Congress since 1965.
Second longest serving congressman in the Congress.
And the ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee.
Yes. Yep. And the former chairman of the House Judiciary
Committee. And my former boss, because I used to work there. So.
Wait a minute. Just because you were arrested and were in prison.
No!
You were investigated by the House Judiciary Committee, if I'm not mistaken.
It's not considered your boss. You know, try to build it.
I sat behind him on those uncomfortable benches and watched him take off his white shoes with no socks.
Those were
I was there.
Trust me. So we're going to talk about jobs tonight, Terry.
Let's talk about jobs. And I don't know about you, but I don't have one.
Clearly.
Anybody else want to confess? You know?
That's right.
I am not.
So what you're telling us, Terry, is like Mitt Romney, you're independently wealthy. You don't have to work. Well, Mark and I wish we could live like that, but not everyone.
Engagement.
No. He relies on Jan, his wife, who's in the audience.
Yeah, right.
Fine.
Terry, tell me you don't tie your dog to the roof.
Him in a cage.
Right. Yeah, I got to be fair. He was in a cage.
On the roof of a car.
Be fair.
Everybody.
The roof of this house.
Be fair.
You're right.
Or eat dog when he was 6 years old.
Thank you, Glenn. You think you're part of the show?
Nice.
You got a license? You got a permit?
That's right.
Call the FCC. Can we get the FCC down here?
Everybody that buys a sarcastic T-shirt, all of a sudden they're a radio talk show host. Figure it out.
Join us in this raucosity. All you have to do is drive down to 1211 U Street, stop into Ben's next door to Ben's Chili Bowl. Come on to the back,
behind the curtain,
up the stairs.
Lots of good food here, you know, spare French fries. And I think Mark.
And where else can you get drunk and listen to radio at the same time?
And Mark's buying tonight.
Yeah. In fact, we get drunk and talk on the radio.
I don't recall that.
Yeah. So the issue.
We're talking about jobs. I did notice in his press thing that he's talking about. You know, right now we've lost 28 million. No, there's 28 million unemployed or underemployed. Mm-hmm. 28 million workers. I mean, that's an astounding number. You figure out of all the population, well, we got a little over 300 million, so maybe one-fourth of those are actually probably about one-sixth or seventh of those.
Well, we know the unemployment rate is about 8%, but underemployed would
– Yeah, that's the other thing that's not talked about enough, and that is how many people – so many people that had jobs that allowed them to pay their bills, to raise their families, to put their children in college, and now they're flipping burgers or making pizzas or doing something, which that's not to disparage that job. Yeah, it's just that it's not going to pay the bills. And we're not talking about people who don't have – we're talking about people with master's degrees, people coming out of college. And the sad thing is you get two people today that come out of college and they're both working at Pizza Hut. The only problem is the one who – excuse me, you get a person who comes out of college is working at Pizza Hut beside someone who didn't go to college. The problem is the person who came out of college is paying $1,100 a month for their college, for their student loans, and the person that didn't, they're making the same amount of money, but they're actually a little bit better off, well, a lot better financially.
And the ramifications of all of this, in case you haven't read about it, I'm sure you have, you know, the Social Security is now supposedly going to run out in
2033.
Well, about a week and a half before I die.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to run out.
You're going to live the age of 312?
312 is what I'm going for.
Wow.
Yeah,
you
know, but
wow.
My dad made it to 412.
Apparently.
But anyway, you know, because of the lower wages, that's one of the reasons why Social Security is now in more trouble, because the wages that people are getting, therefore the payroll tax, is getting lower and lower and lower. So the ramifications of this underemployment are profound. I mean, they really are. And it's going to affect every community, every state, every county, et cetera. And it's not, you know, I don't want to be the creature of doom here, but I can't
You mean like other times?
Like other times, today.
I was about to say, who are you and what did you do with Terry?
Exactly. You are the
harbinger of doom. I was about to say.
Doom,
I mean,
the creature of doom, the doctor of democracy, and Mr. Peace.
You left your black robe and your sickle home for a change.
But you tell me how we're going to ever get back to the kind of jobs that people had before with unions and, you know, steady jobs and security and health care benefits, et cetera, retirement.
I understand if we all move to Costa Rica. They are there.
Yeah, well, that's
so there are opportunities.
You know. And, you know, I think about it from a businessman's point of view. I hate to say it. Why would you bring jobs back to America? Why would you do that?
Well, let me.
You can obviously hire somebody abroad, you know, somewhere else in some other nation for far less. Do that.
I tell you, the problem is the national religion. That's the problem. The national religion. The national religion has become the free market. Free market has been, it's no longer an economic model. It's now a religion. How dare you should ever speak against the free market? There was a time
I want you to finish.
Okay.
Just one question. I thought we knew that the free market doesn't exist.
Well, we know that.
Oh.
We know that. But now if we could only get our voices on the mainstream media, then everyone would know that.
Okay, but go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
But my point is this.
That's the only time
there was
I'm
a
sorry.
Time. Wait a minute. Let me stop.
Whoa. Now you
even
have to
as we speak.
Has entered the building.
Yeah. Congressman John Conyers Jr.
The great. Oh, he's giving a standing ovation right here at Ben's Next Door. Here he comes, and we're very glad to have him here. Have a seat, sir.
Who I might add, in case you all might not know this, is the official hero of the Raucous
Caucus.
About a year ago.
That's true. We designated him the official hero of the Raucous Caucus.
The very first official hero of the Raucous
and
Caucus.
And
actually the only so far.
Yeah, welcome.
Because, you know, the rest of these people just haven't quite
top of the
up.
Evening, everybody.
Welcome, Congressman
Conyers.
Welcome.
We take it that you come from Capitol Hill doing good things, as always.
Or stopping bad things?
We were in the negative mode, stopping the bad.
That's right, because the Republicans are in control. What were they trying to do tonight?
Well, they had a bill that was pretty complicated, but in the end, it was a bill that was trying to cover the business people at the expense of working people.
What a surprise.
Yeah, that's a lot of character for the Republican Party.
Covering business at the expense of working people?
Is this a first?
This sounds to me like a boring everyday day in Congress.
It's the routine.
That's right.
But we understand
what we do.
one of the reasons we wanted you here, Congressman Conyers, is because we know that you have a jobs bill that is far better than any other jobs bill that has been proposed. And
when the Democrats get the House back after President Obama's re-election,
here's hoping.
After
here's
President hoping. Obama's re-election in 2012,
and you resume your chairmanship,
and you become of the House Judiciary Committee, we expect this jobs bill to be the top priority.
It's the top priority now, and it will be the top priority in the next Congress.
Tell us what the bill does, please.
Well, the bill simply says, and this is for the first time, that we will now put on our domestic agenda top priority reducing unemployment to zero in the United States.
Zero?
That's great, great, great.
That means, in other words, that everybody will have a job.
How can the means to do
that? How can you possibly reduce unemployment to zero?
Because I'm ready to go back to work.
Well, we need to get Terry back to work.
Yeah, we do.
Because Terry and I would like to do the show alone.
Right.
Oh, but you couldn't.
And preferably get him on the evening shift.
Yeah, we're hoping to get him a job on some boat, like maybe in the Indian Ocean or something.
I'd take that, sure.
So how do we do that? How do we get from the unemployment being at, I think, 103% right now?
8%.
Yeah. 8%. Oh, excuse me. 8.2. But how do we get it down to zero?
Well, first of all, we take care of all the things that need to be dealt with, and I just happen to have a list of them here.
Okay. The congressman, again, has come prepared, I assure you.
First of all, we create a lot of work by those who need to be employed in the following sector: repairing our nation's bridges,
infrastructure,
our roads, the infrastructure, highways, dams, schools.
So this sounds like President Obama's jobs bill. Very
similar. No, no.
I mean, he did a lot of infrastructure. It didn't pass.
Well, yeah. No. Well, no.
What's the difference?
The whole idea here is that this goes all the way and does not just take up a certain number of millions of jobs.
And this is to be by the government actually employing these people to begin with. Correct?
Well, this is one part of this starts it off. High-speed electric trains, mass transit systems in cities and towns, broadband building, creating green jobs in solar, wind, geothermal, clean energy technology. Now, all of this would take out of the 15 million people without a job, this would take them up, but there's still others that I count as underemployed.
We were just talking about that, yeah.
Working at minimum wage or less, mm-hmm. that are occasionally employed, that is, they don't work regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you put all of this together, we don't stop at just taking care of the obvious things. We then create federal programs to come in over and above the obvious visual infrastructure needs to begin to put everybody to work or training for the jobs that we need.
That's the next question I was going to ask you about, an element of training, because there are a lot of people out here who did something. Let's say they worked in a factory making shoes or whatever it is, and that factory is gone, and that was what they knew how to do, and they're ready and willing and able to work, but they don't have any skills to do other things, and that's why I was wondering about the training. How does the training work? How does it work? How people get training?
Well, you get training because there's a system set up for the skills that are needed that are not filled. And so we match people up. Your example was perfect, as usual. You take a person and you match him with or her with whatever jobs are needed. Now, notice across the country, what jobs are needed will vary greatly. You'd be in mining in one area, you'd be in manufacturing in another, you'll be in retail and something else. So it would call for a complete renovation of the Department of Labor. And I love the Secretary of Labor, but we need to really go about this. And the key thing is how many people are still unemployed.
Congressman Conyers, I want to ask you about globalization. A lot of jobs are going to China, to India, to Thailand. A lot of American companies are going to Mexico, you name it. They're going to places where workers are treated even more unfairly than in the United States. There's a lot of child labor. There's a lot of bad labor conditions. What can we do? What have you done? What can the Congress do to help protect American workers that are losing jobs to globalization?
Very simple. We have proposals, legislative proposals, that would prevent the outsourcing of any American jobs, period.
How would you get that out of, would that mean repealing NAFTA and all of that?
Well, yeah.
Yeah?
It will.
Yeah,
all good.
Right, I'll go with that.
NAFTA and about six other NAFTA
types. Does it stop rewarding companies with tax breaks who take jobs overseas?
We are rewarding people to leave this country.
Right, I know.
Jobs and leave the jobless here.
Okay, well, one of the basic questions that I'm sure everybody's going to ask in Congress, certainly the Republicans, you know, how are we going to pay for this?
Well, we pay for it the same way we pay for everything else. We use money.
I'll buy that.
Yeah. I mean, you can... They can ask us a question with that kind of audacity after putting together the biggest military projects year after year that has ever happened in the world, and then giving the Pentagon military aircraft they don't want, giving the Navy ships they have asked not to have built, but they're rewarding. It's an inside game where they reward the builders of these aircraft and ships.
So military spending. Yeah.
And if I might comment on that, you know, and here's the way I feel about the question, how are we going to pay for it? Our country always finds the money to pay for things that they want. If we want to invade another country, we come up with the money. If we want to
new... Well, we didn't do that in Iraq.
We just bought it.
You know, we didn't come up with the money.
We always come up with money to spend on what we want. The only question is what we're going to spend it on. I think the issue when we talk about can we afford whatever we can afford is not whether we can afford it. It's where are we going to allocate the money that we spend? Where does it go? Is it going to go to the Pentagon? Is it going to go to some big corporation? Or are we going to invest it in our people and our workers? So I think kind of, Terry, the question, can we afford it, should be changed to where are we going to move our resources around so that the everyday common person can be helped rather than somebody gets a new yacht.
No, you're both right, though.
Of course.
Because if you don't have the money, you just put it in the debt of $15.1 trillion and keep on going. So you're right. If you don't have the money, that's what we owe.
Well, the other part of it is this. The other part of it is this money, all of this is not going into a vacuum. The money's not going into space. If we are training someone, you have to pay for the buildings, you have to pay for the audiovisual equipment you use, you pay for all of those things. When you're building a bridge, when you're building something, you've got to buy steel, you've got to buy cement. So the money is not disappearing. It's going to go back into the economy, and you're going to get a multiplier effect from
right,
it.
That's
so
right.
when we spend the money, we're actually going to get something out of it, but instead of it being filtered through some Defense Department, a contract, it'll be filtered through the people.
Let me ask you, Congressman, a kind of difficult question here. You know, obviously your bill, I think everybody in this crowd, in this audience, would be in favor of that bill, and I know you've got a number of congressmen besides yourselves backing it. But for any bill this major, for any kind of reform this large, it's going to require, obviously, the people to be involved, the citizens to be involved. The question I have to you is the American public feeling enough pain to get behind you, to get behind these kind of bills, or do we have to keep on going further down before the action is going to happen? Is there enough pain, as you and I have talked about, to get people really in the streets?
Well, I don't look at it from a question of pain. I look at it from a question of education, because a lot of people have never thought that long about it. Frequently, if you're really on the bottom, a job is a job. What they make, or if it's military, oh, well, that's great. And so we have to educate people up. I don't want them to feel any more pain. And the way we do that is through town hall meetings, through local clubs, through labor endorsements, and laborers endorsing our bills, because they all lead to full employment, and full employment gives labor, which is getting really beat from the conservatives, because they want to end collective bargaining in the United States as we know it.
Congressman Conyers, President Obama, of course, had his stimulus package, and most recently he had his own jobs bill. Is this something that the Democrats should have done the first 2 years when they were in control of the House? And if so, why wasn't it done then? And how can we be sure that if President Obama is reelected and you again become chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, that it'll happen when the Democrats control the Congress next time around?
Well, you remember when the president was first elected, he started out on a health care bill that he had no idea he was going to put 2.5 years or more in on.
That crowded out other things like the job.
Well, everything else became, because they attacked it. The whole thing on the other side is to stop Obama from doing anything. And so when they were able to slow down the health care bill, they put jobs went on the bottom. This time, we know, hindsight is great, isn't it? Now we know.
It
won't happen anymore.
Do you consider then this probably one of the most important elections that we're coming up on in a long time? I mean, is this truly a major turning point election?
This is the most important election for this simple reason. If Obama isn't reelected, Romney takes us over the cliff.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Okay?
Right.
Yeah, then we're all in trouble. I mean, people are going to be dying in the streets.
Yeah.
Because poor people rarely have enough to live on today anyway, with food stamps or Medicaid's been cut severely. He wants to cut Medicaid further. He wants to cut food stamps further. Give us an idea, Mr. Conyers, if you can, if, God forbid, Mitt Romney becomes next president of the United States, what do you think will happen in this country in 2013, 2014?
Well, the first thing he would do is voucherize Social Security. The next thing he would do is trim Medicare, which would hit a lot of seniors. And I shudder to think what would happen with our foreign policy, because he wanted to attack Iran and conduct a preemptive strike. And, of course, he would preserve the tax breaks for the wealthy,
if not increase them.
Yeah. Your proposal sounds to me like a new deal. You know, it sounds like we're moving in, which I think is what we need. You know, I always recall, there's a story I always recall, Ben Stiller, the comedian from Stiller, Ben Stiller Sr., talked about when he was growing up during the Depression. And he said, you know, basically they were starving, they didn't have anything. And then along comes the WPA and the CCC, and his father got to go out, work, they had food. He said, his dad came home the first day, and he was so happy because he had a pair of boots. They gave him a pair of boots to work in, something as simple as that. And it sounds to me like what happens when these things are provided is it returns a level of dignity. I think people who lose their jobs and who have to look at their families and don't know how they're going to make it, I think one of the issues we have here is dignity.
That's why we maintain, Garland, that having a job is a right. Without that, you don't have your dignity. You can't survive. And there's nothing more important than that. And another thing about Roosevelt is that he acknowledged we're in a depression. What we have now is an economy that is so volatile because everything isn't in a depression. If you walked through Ben's, you wouldn't think we were in a depression. But right around us are spots where there are more than 30-40% of the people that want work can't get it. And so it's you get this mixed picture.
Yes, yes, yes.
Let me
it's
ask
very
you,
deceptive.
Let me ask you, Congressman, in terms of that, you're a congressman from Detroit, and I have a number of friends in Detroit, and I know that things are really tough there. I mean, how important is this to Detroit? How bad is the situation in Detroit? Are the automobile companies, you know, recovering at all? Is Detroit going to survive unless this kind of bill is passed?
Well, Detroit's going to survive because we bailed out the big three.
Ah.
Now I'm asking them to bail out the 99%.
Have they increased any jobs? Have the really increased jobs significantly?
Well, sales are going up. Mm-hmm. When sales go up, more people get hired. And more profits are made by the automobile company.
I suspect Detroit's not a big fan of Mitt Romney, which said, let Detroit go bankrupt. I mean, Michigan should go overwhelmingly for President Obama, right?
Oh, we elected Obama
in 08.
08?
Yeah.
We're going to re-elect him from Michigan in 12.
I would think Detroit. Detroit knows who's on their its side.
And all you have to do is quote
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Now he is one of the most curious candidates of all time.
What curiouser than the other Republican candidate?
Well, yes, he's more curious because those guys were totally off track. But Romney has taken almost every position known
yes.
in the campaign.
Yes, so half the time he's
one
right.
One time or the other.
I always say you can't call him a waffle because a waffle only has two sides.
That's true.
Okay, well, we're going to go to break.
Let's just say, if people want to join us, 1211 U Street, the room is full, but there's always room in the back. You can pull out some chairs. We'd love to have more people join us, 1211 U Street.
And this is the Raucous Caucus, WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. We will be back with you and Congressman Conyers in just a moment.
In honor of the annual celebration of the cherry blossoms, world-renowned artist Peter Max, the official artist for the 2012 Centennial Celebration, has created a dynamic commemorative poster in his iconic style. We're very pleased that Peter Max has generously provided a limited quantity of these posters to WPFW, which we offer to you for a special contribution of $89.30. As a bonus, the poster will be signed by Peter Max himself. To get your autographed poster, visit us online at www.wpfw.org.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
You have a short, quick question. Just come up and I'll give you my microphone for 30 seconds.
And ready. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, good evening. This is the Raucous Caucus on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica.
the most important station in the United States of America.
Hear, hear.
I am Terry D. Kester here with my colleagues
Mark Levine
and my other colleague
Garland Nixon
and our special guest, Congressman
John Conyers
Jr.
Thank
from
you.
Detroit.
We have a full audience here. 1211 U Street. There's still time to join us, though. If you want to come, just come out the back of Ben's next door, climb up the stairs behind the curtain, and you will see a raucous crowd here.
A raucous crowd. And before we get to some questions, because the congressman and our we were just talking just a moment beforehand during our short break there, and we wanted to talk a little bit about the issue of peace, which was special to congressman's not only political agenda but to his heart as well. So
let me just tell you that. Martin Luther King formed my political philosophy from the day I started out. I was endorsed by King.
Were you his lawyer? Garland said you were his lawyer.
Well, I wasn't precisely his lawyer. I was one of his lawyers.
One of his lawyers, okay.
But Martin Luther King had this vision that we are still using as a template today in the Progressive Caucus. Jobs, justice, and peace. Jobs, full employment, what we were already talking about. Justice, which includes both economic and political justice. And what, those are two big subjects within their own. And the other is peace. Now, this was way back in the 60s, King had already figured out that you might be able to get the jobs and a measure of justice, but it really wouldn't work unless you had peace, unless that was right on the top of the agenda. And so he advocated nonviolence. He advocated diplomacy. He was against building up the military arsenals that nations get into contests over. One nation has got something, another one gets atomic, another then goes and gets nuclear, and so it goes. And the hypocrisy, of course, is that the nations that already have the nuclear want everybody else not to have anything. And nations don't take to that very kindly. So jobs, justice, and peace are what inform us in the Congressional Progressive Caucus even today.
Well, I have a question I want to throw in there since we're on that subject. And I'm very proud right now to be sitting next to the man who is responsible for having Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday become a holiday.
And one of the co-founders of the Black Caucus.
Yeah. And my question about that is, how difficult was that? I know it didn't happen overnight. How difficult and what kind of pushback did you get getting that done?
Well, in the beginning, I remember members, when they knew that I had the bill and I'd introduce it every year, they would say, put me on your King holiday bill. I know it won't pass, but my constituents are all hollering for it. Well, that's how it did get passed. Enough constituents across the country, we kept bringing it back. It took 15 years.
Wow.
Before it passed the House, and then it went to the Senate. And by then, the senators had gotten the feel. They knew what the public mood was. And they were giving speeches. All of them were making like King came from their state. And so they had to talk for at least 15 minutes to a half an hour on the merits of the bill. So the bill passed overwhelmingly.
Let me ask you, too, Congressman Conyers, in the same topic here, and then we'll get to some questions from the audience as well. I mean, if you don't have peace or without peace, you have a situation that undermines practically every other social effort that we try to perfect or offer to our people. And we forget that. War is probably the greatest distraction in all kinds of horrible ways as far as and political ways that keeps the country and keeps
financial ways
and financial ways
economical.
That keeps us from making the social progress that we need to make. Given that,
and given the power, the beauty, the dignity, et cetera, of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., do you see at this point, besides, of course, yourself, but any leaders coming up that are like unto King? I'm not saying the same as King. That's impossible. He's wonderful, special, and unique. But do you see any leaders coming up today that can lead us the way he did?
Or even I will say unequivocally, there is nobody on the American scene that can even come close. All we can do at best is to advocate, to imitate, to replicate the great thoughts and the ideas, the oratory, the writing, and the action.
And the action.
Martin Luther King Jr.
And the courage and the action and the risk that he took continually. We do have a question here from the audience. And, Bill, come on over here. And
we get Terry's mic. Yep. Do us a favor. Don't give it back.
No, right? Just run on down the stairs with
it. You see this cable? You know, I got this cable.
You got
45 seconds.
This is 89.3 FM WPFW in Washington.
Okay, Congressman Conyers, first of all, as Mark, am an alumnus of your employ. Is the jobs bill the same one that you've been putting forth since 1968, roughly, number one? Number two.
Number one. No.
Number two. What do you have plans? Do you and the Progressive Caucus have some kind of political plan if the Supreme Court completely wipes out the president's health care bill?
Great question. Thank you, Bill.
I was in the Supreme Court the day that this case was argued.
Well, there were 3 days.
I was in the first day. Yeah.
Couldn't take it after that, huh? It was too discouraging.
it was very clear to me. I've been in the Supreme Court a number of times, but I have never seen the court in which the members of the United States Supreme Court were quibbling. Some were making jokes.
Yeah.
Some were talking back and forward to one another.
Thank you. That's a compliment against the Supreme Court is copying the Raucous Caucus. I mean, that is phenomenal.
We have more dignity. Thank you very much.
I don't think that's a compliment.
We have more
dignity.
We do have a copyright on this, don't we, or something? Anyway, sorry. Please go ahead.
So, what I see is that the mandatory provision could be found in which we merely require that people buy insurance if they're not insured and subsidize them if they can't afford it.
Right.
So, wait a minute. What's so extreme about that? Because if we don't, that means that all the rest of us that are buying insurance will have our insurance premiums elevated to cover those that aren't.
I don't think it's any more extreme than Medicare. I think the right has been trying to end Medicare for some 50 years.
Right.
And they can't end Medicare because too many people like it. So they want to strangle the president's plan, the Affordable Health Care Act, right there in the crib before people start liking that as well.
Well, the more people find out what's in the president's health care, and I am one that is proud to call it Obamacare.
Okay, we can call
president.
Thank you.
The president, a bill on health care named after the president. Because years from now, that would be looked upon as a commendatory rather than as critique.
Here.
When we move to full payer, you know, I'm single payer. You know, I'm glad you related the story about Dr. King's the bill for Dr. King's holiday. Because often when bills are introduced that in the immediacy don't appear to have a good chance of being of passing, many people basically say it's a waste of time. They they make the argument that you only introduce, you know, they think like a legislator, what can I get through? But I think you made a brilliant point, and that is, you kind of start somewhere with a bill, and it builds momentum, and eventually it has a good chance of getting through. But if you never start, you'll never get. That's why, of course, we know that single payer is an eventuality.
Well, and also is the Department of Peace, Dennis Kucinich's bill to create the counterpart to the Defense Department is the Department of Peace.
Wouldn't that be a beautiful day? You know, and that brings it back to you, I mean, the audience and all the listeners, too. I mean, eventually you've got to get involved in all this. And one of the simple things you can obviously do in these upcoming elections is simply ask your congressman when you go to the town hall meeting or whatever, does he support the same Humphrey Hawkins job bill?
And what number is the bill again, Terry?
The bill number is
870.
Or universal health care.
Medicare 676.
But Congressman Conyers, I got to tell you, you sat in on that oral argument. I heard it over the computer, and it left me feeling really sick. As they were joking, it became clear, very clear to me, that five of them, I fear, are going to overturn at least the individual mandate, if not all of Obamacare. And as horrific as that is for all of us with health care premiums going through the roof, I wonder if we can, if it happens, and I sincerely hope it doesn't, but I fear it will. Can that be an opportunity to say, look, you won't let us do half steps, but you agree that Medicare is constitutional because they don't dare touch that one. Let's finally get Medicare for all. We tried the half steps. We tried something that, frankly, was originally proposed by conservatives at the Heritage Foundation. Again, I like Obamacare. I think it's better than the current system, but I don't think it's good as Medicare for all. Do you think that you can help lead the charge if come June – the Supreme Court strikes down Obamacare to say, let's just take Medicare, let's scratch the 65-year limit and say that we all get Medicare.
That's precisely what we would have to do. There would be nothing else left to do. We could reintroduce the same thing again, but let's go for it. No.
Right. I mean,
this is where you take a defeat, which I don't think will happen, but turn it into the beginning of an ultimate victory.
And do you think there's
a great idea.
Do you think there's support out there? I mean, it seems to me if you tell American people, we cannot cut the runaway insurance costs. We tried to do it. We tried to do it using the private sector. And Supreme Court said you can't do it that way. Then you say, you know what? The only thing we have is this tried and true thing called Medicare that 94% of people on Medicare like. It's my favorite statistic. A poll shows that of all people that are on Medicare, 94% like the program, 3% don't, and 3% aren't sure. All right. I don't know of anything in America that 94% of us agree on other than Medicare. And again, as someone who's under 65, unlike some of my colleagues, we want an opportunity to be in Medicare. We want an opportunity to be in Medicare as well. We don't think that it should only be for you lucky seniors.
Well, this is a very important issue that most people really want single-payer universal health care.
Right. I call it Medicare for all because single-payer scares some people, but Medicare doesn't scare anyone because we all know
it works. And we know Medicare works.
Right.
You're right.
It's just a labeling thing. It's the same thing. We all
the
know
title is being used more and more frequently. Medicare for all.
So is this something that you think that you can come push for if the Supreme Court strikes down Obamacare? I mean, do you think this is something where I remember when Obamacare came and we had some moderate or right-wing Democrats, Joe Lieberman comes to mind, but there were others, Ben Nelson, who didn't think that we could expand Medicare even to people age 55 and up. But if the Supreme Court strikes it down, it seems to me an argument can be made for not just them, but Susan Collins, and she may be the only moderate Republican left, but to the Republicans and to say that this is something that we need. This is the only way to get health care done in America.
Well, you know, this is what makes politics great and interesting, isn't it? We can speculate, what if, do we do this? Do we do that? Do we do nothing? Do we limit? Do we stop participating? So I'm taking the positive role tonight, if I might. I believe that the 5-4 decision is going to turn in our favor.
Really?
And the person... Oh,
Kennedy?
I hope so.
Well, he's always the five.
Yeah, right.
For Chief good Justice Roberts.
For good or for evil. Yeah. And he surprised me more than once. And I'm thinking that they... And those guys, they know what they're doing. And so I'm thinking that in the national interest, the five is going to come down on preserving the mandatory.
I hope that you're right. I hope you're right. But you know what? I can tell you, Congressman, after Bush v. Gore, I hope you're right, but I fear you're wrong. After Bush v. Gore, Citizens United, I don't have faith.
Let me ask another question. We've been talking about the Supreme Court and Citizens United, which Mark just brought up, which we know is the bane. I mean, it's probably the most destructive bill that's ever been, or destructive decision the Supreme Court's ever made.
I don't know, ever.
There's a couple. It is one or two I can think of.
10 years.
Yeah,
in the last 10 years. In fact, they're just not doing a very good job all the way around. But anyway, are there any bills in Congress to counteract Citizens versus United?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have bills.
Disclosure Act.
The Disclosure Act and others. There are actually nearly a dozen bills that deal with Citizens United. So we are on it. The Progressive Caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus, the Hispanic Caucus, the Asian Pacific Caucus.
The whole Democratic Party is pretty much behind it, the Disclosure Act.
But over there, here's a question. You know, you've got Alan West crawling around looking under the tables for communists.
Yeah.
God forbid, I don't know. You know, you've got a lot of crazy...
He and Joe McCarthy have a list.
Yeah. You've got a
I think you're on that list, Mr. Conyers.
You've got a lot of craziness going on over there.
I think I would like to take as many... From the Raucous Caucus to his congressional district.
Oh, yes. Here.
We'll go.
Have a little discussion in every town hall meeting,
sure.
City hall, wherever he wants, and even when he's not there, to make sure people understand communists. I mean, you got to be going, turning the clock back a whole lot.
He fell asleep 30 years ago and never woke up.
In fact, I think we should invite him here to come on the Raucous Caucus. And we can all wear the Dale Jester hats with the bells on the top of them.
I think you ought to take a vote, though, to make sure that the caucus is in support of him being invited.
We can invite him. That doesn't mean we won't ask him very tough questions.
You know what? He might not stick around for long.
I think maybe the mistake we've made, guys, I mean, Mark and Garland, you know, and because of the shoddy way that the Supreme Court got involved in the healthcare debate and the shoddy way that they behaved, you know, we should have been inviting them to the Raucous Caucus. I mean,
The Supreme Court?
Supreme Court, yeah. I mean, this is what
sure.
we...
Sure.
Clarence Thomas would come, there's no doubt.
No doubt. No doubt at all, yeah.
He'd probably fall asleep.
He wouldn't... He just wouldn't say anything
right.
like he does
at the Supreme Court. We have another question from the audience.
Another one of our brilliant members of the caucus here.
Hi, I'm Valerie. Am I on?
Yes, you're on.
Valerie.
So my question is, I'm turning 40 this year, and for most
people... You don't look a day 35.
You're making me feel old, real old.
Yes, you are.
I'm gonna start counting my age in Celsius from now on.
So for most of my conscious life, the Republican Party has been working to repeal the New Deal. And a lot of the things that trickle-down economics... And the things that Ronald Reagan has been pretty much sainted for in retrospect seems like systematically we've been just pulling back all of the workplace protections, the economic justice and the progress that was made that gave people dignity after the Great Depression. And I'm worried that we've maybe crossed a turning point where so much has been taken away, and I'm worried going into my second half of my life that we might not be able to get that back. And I'm worried about the future for my daughter. I'm worried about being a generation of people that might never get to retire because we're going to work until we die, because it's scary out there. So I'm wondering, what do you think needs to happen in the next, I don't know, the next 5 years, the next 10 years?
This is exactly why the election in November is so important, because if we don't send Obama back. We can debate it if Obama's elected. If Romney gets in, we're over the cliff. And there will be a lot of people in the 99% who said, oh, I didn't realize that he was that bad. You know, there's too many people that are willing to toss a vote against their own self-interest.
I know.
Yes.
And then regret it for the rest of their life.
I have an important question. What would you say, because this is something that we hear from sometimes from our callers or from various callers or from political conversations in the street. What do you say to the – what argument do you use for the people who say, well, I'm angry at the Democrats or I'm angry at Obama and I'm going to vote third party for
or I'm not
going to
vote.
Or Mickey Mouse
say,
or whoever.
President Obama hasn't done enough for the progressive causes. I'm not going to vote. We hear that.
Yeah. You know, how do you address that?
Well, first of all, I can say to you that when Nader ran a third party, it cost us a Democratic candidacy.
Yeah. Sure did.
Yes.
And it wasn't that Nader wasn't good. It was just that he took the votes. It played right into the Republicans' hands.
Yeah, sure did.
And this is not the hardest issue in the world because – anybody that doesn't vote at all is giving his enemy, his political opponent, a half a vote.
That's right.
When you don't vote. Now, when you vote for an ideal minority party, if that's your conception of it, you are then enabling the conservative opponents to the Democrat. And believe me, the Democratic Party is full of frailties, errors, mistakes, poor judgment. But
sounds like the rugged.
It's
talk.
All.
Speak for yourself, Terry.
It's all we've got,
right.
And the fight's got to go on. I tell my friends inside to make it better. Join me and make it a better Democratic Party.
Yeah, that's it. Good point.
And this obviously means that we also need not just to have Obama win the election, but we also need to have a lot of Congress.
We need to take back the House.
Yeah, we need to take back the House, and we need to keep the Senate. We have one more question and time for one more question.
Tessa! So, yeah. Hey, loyal member of the caucus.
How are you, Tessa?
Good evening, all of you.
Hello.
Greetings, my friend.
I came in respect for you.
Thank you.
I didn't have a plan to come. I came because they told me you are here. I didn't have any plan to ask a question, but your hosts mentioned peace in Western Ethiopia, actually in all over Ethiopia. There is a land grab going on, and a language group called the Anyuak, which are about 500,000, are being wiped out. About 40,000 of them fled to Kenya. Almost the same number have fled to Sudan. There is also another ethnic cleansing going on in southern Ethiopia. That is the Amhara people. They are planning to ethnically cleanse 78,000 of them. They have already cleaned 22,000 of them. It's still going on. There is also torture. They are making those people chew.
I've got your drift.
Okay. What are you asking, Mr. Cornish?
Oh, I know what the question is.
Okay.
Let me give you the answer.
Okay.
Now, and
thank
I
you,
thank
Tessa.
You for raising that.
Thank you,
because,
Tessa.
Thank you.
Because this, my brother.
I love you.
Thank you, my brother. Now.
Thank you, Tessa.
Yes, I love and respect Congressman Conyers. I love the three hosts of Raucous Caucus.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now,
all right. Now, here's the issue behind that very important question. The United Nations should be involved in the African, on the African continent, in the diaspora, working hard to end the tribal differences, the land, the territorial differences, and any other questions. Water is going to soon be a big, big issue, not only in Africa, but throughout the world.
What can the United States do to help Ethiopia?
Well, we could help by taking a position in the United Nations that would get a majority of the countries to come in, because to be honest with you, in New York, it's too often the case, well, look, these are tribes, they've got congressmen, they've got differences that go back hundreds of years. We can't begin to untangle who's right or wrong. So, and you shrug your shoulders and let it go. But we have to say that we advocate nonviolence in all instances, in every continent, all around the world, and starting with Africa, because there is a lot of tribal, genocidal, violent activity going on that is totally unacceptable to peace-loving people that say they follow Martin Luther King Jr.
Let me ask you in terms of that, because Tesla is one of our loyal listeners, and he's brought this up to us a number of times. Has President Obama been aware? Oh, I'm sorry, we don't even have time for that. We only got 1 minute left. We got time for that?
No, we have time. We have 2 minutes, two and a half minutes.
Okay, has President Obama been involved at all in any of the decisions affecting Ethiopia? What could be done for Ethiopia? I mean, has this been on the agenda for anybody in our government at this point?
No, not only has the president not been involved, but our distinguished Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, has not, to my knowledge, been involved either. And that's something...
Maybe she's listening now.
Black caucus. Well, we have other ways. In addition, if she happens to miss it, the Congressional Black Caucus feels very deeply about this subject.
And they've taken a stand, the Congressional Black Caucus, in favor of helping the people of Ethiopia. That's terrific.
Yes.
And again, that gets back to our point we were speaking about earlier, oddly, in an abstract way, and that is the third party. In the event, and this is what people, when they talk about third party candidates, don't think about. In the event that the Republicans would take control, there is no possibility that these things could be addressed.
No.
If we have the Democrats in control, though it may be a little tough, there is a possibility that some of these things that we're concerned with, that we could get some action on.
We can fight if we're in control. If they're in control, they will take us straight over the cliff. That's clear.
Whether jobs or health care or peace or anything.
You'll be eating freedom fries again in the cafeteria of the House building.
Probably. I remember that. I was there. I worked there.
We had
freedom fries. I remember that.
Well, I think that begins to sum it up, because what it comes down to, as you said before, Congressman Conyers, this is the most important election that we're coming up on ever.
So participate. Register.
Participate.
Get others registered.
And listen every Tuesday at 7. To the Rockies Caucus.
Thank you, Congressman Conyers, for coming to join us so much.
Thank you.
Our pleasure to have you. The Raucous Caucus hero, the first Raucous Caucus hero.
The only Raucous
Caucus hero.
John Conyers, Jr.
Now, next month, the month of May, we will be in studio. So those of you that have enjoyed coming here at Ben's, we want you back the first Tuesday in June. All of June, we will be back here at Ben's. But for May, we're going to be in studio and able to take your phone calls.
Right. So just come back here to the Raucous Caucus in June. Always tune in at 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. WPFW Tuesday. We're out of time. Good night, and thank you.